Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire is hosted by volunteers from CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwantlen Nations. In this episode...
The message is clear, it is concise, and it is crisp. We do not give our consent for fish farms to be in our territories.
They keep consulting, talking about, and what people are wanting is action. We want action on energy efficiency, we want action on getting First Nation communities off diesel, we want action on moving us more expeditiously toward a clean energy future.
While we are grateful that the Commission's policy allows us to even be able to broadcast as we do, we feel that there is more that can be done to help us become even more sustainable.
But first, here are the headlines. Co-op Radio's Garnegie O'Sullivan files this broadcast on the 60 Scoop Settlement announced by Ottawa earlier this month.
The Aboriginal Adoption Class Action suit has been reached with the Government of Canada on October 2017. A 60 Scoop class action settlement was reached with the Government of Canada. 60 Scoop refers to the practice of governments in Canada between 1951 to 1991 of taking Indigenous children from their families and placing them in foster homes or adoption with non-Aboriginal homes. These scooped children lost their culture, language, identity, and Aboriginal persons, and frequently suffered emotional, spiritual, sexual, and physical abuse. The settlement will also provide compensation to all persons who are Indian, as defined in the Indian Act, being individuals registered or entitled to be registered for Indian status, or Inuit, who were removed from their homes in Canada from 1951 to 1991 and placed in care of non-Indigenous foster and adoptive parents. The settlement provides that Canada will pay between $500 million to $750 million to be divided between qualified individual claimants. We're not all getting a big $750 million as we should. We're probably only going to be getting 25 to 50 grand.
Thanks to Co-op Radio for that update. Our next headline comes from Yaffa Marouf from the CKUT radio in Montreal on the launch of a movement for peace.
With multiple wars taking place across the planet, the Quebec Movement for Peace took the streets of Montreal in October. The newly formed coalition opposes Canada's proposal to increase its military budget. I interviewed participants in the march.
Well, my name is André Deveaux, and I'm part of a group called the Montreal Raging Grannies.
So why are you here today?
We protest because we want Canada to get out of NATO. Because it's really, they're more and more money is going towards war armament. People are suffering, and it has to stop. And Canada's ally, the United States, are basically running the show, and more money is funneled into armaments, and we want to tell the government, stop this. People are suffering.
Thank you.
My name is Shahrzad.
So why are you here today?
I am here to support peace and against war, because we have so much injustice happening around the world, and we have to echo our voice that we are not supporting what imperialist government or even our government here in Canada, US, are doing around the world. So we have to stop these wars. We need peace as soon as possible.
It's at this place exactly.
Yes, with pleasure. You know, it just happened that we are having this demonstration today, which is the founding event of the Quebec Movement for Peace. And we were supposed to be across the street on the other side. Crossing, I was with Amir, and I told Amir, have you seen the monument to the Boer War, to the Canadian participation in the Boer War? He didn't know. Most Montrealers don't know. The word imperial and empire is engraved in the stone there with pride.
This is Yaffa Marouf reporting for Groundwire and CKUT.
Thanks to CKUT for that headline. Our final headline comes from Michael Welsh of campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on the occupied Anishinaabe territory on the homeland of the Métis Nation. A Winnipeg developer is suing a 49 named individuals after $500,000 in alleged damages stemming from last summer's direct action in defense on the Parker Land site. Andrew Marques, who controls and owns the property through his firm Gem Equities, has claimed through his lawyer that his efforts to prepare the land for the construction of a housing complex has been delayed by the actions of a group and accrued damages for him potentially in the tens of millions of dollars. Social and environmental activists have set up an 8-week-long encampment, preventing the crews from clear-cutting the aspen forest, which has become much beloved by local residents. Importantly, as reported in previous installments of Groundwire, the group is also concerned about the significance of the area as a Métis heritage site. Mitchell von Innenveld has been involved with the blockade since its inception.
The plaintiff's lawyer sent us a motion that would amend the original lawsuit that was filed against about five people and then the Parker Wetlands Conservation Committee, and extend it to another 45 individuals who had supposedly partaken in the alleged trespassing at the blockade. Our lawyers are saying that it will probably be 4 or 5 years of a protracted legal battle until this is all settled, but everyone's in it for the long haul.
Innenveld believes the legal battle is worth fighting.
We need to really be supporting Indigenous sovereignty projects and repatriation of land and mandatory consultation with Indigenous people on any use of land that is owed to them.
This case is scheduled to go to court on October 31st. Listeners wishing to stand in solidarity with the Parker Lands defenders can send donations to the group's legal fund by visiting GoFundMe.com and searching for the phrase Legal Help for Roostertown Blockade. Thanks to CKUW for that update. That's it for headlines. Groundwire will be right back after this. That was a band called Holy Hum doing a song called Space and Time from the album All of My Bodies. Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station. Now it's time for our featured stories. Garnegie O'Sullivan provides Groundwire this report on resistance to fish farming in British Columbia.
Historic day today. This is the first time we've ever had all our chiefs and our families represented here to come and speak to you with one voice. One of the questions that I ask is, when did Norway get sovereignty over the Mamalofa and the Nungis, where we no longer have a say in what's going on in our territory?
The message is clear. It is concise and it is crisp. We do not give our consent for fish farms to be in our territories. And so if there are tenders that are up for renewal, they must not be renewed.
They want to pump hydrogen peroxide into the water to kill whatever they want to kill. Mm-hmm. We demand that this isn't allowed as well.
Fish farms are going to go, and the people involved in that will be seen as people with vision. With your help, we can do it real quick. We're still going to do it one way or the other.
That land and water formed us. That is our origin story. That shaped our DNA for tens of thousands of years. So the people who know best than this are those of us that live within this area and see it directly. It is beyond accessing salmon for a sport fishery, beyond accessing salmon for a commercial fishery. It is not a livelihood, it is a life. And that is us. There will be no reconciliation if we are continued to be suppressed.
This is what we're fighting for, all our generations. So no more. We want the fish farms out so we can survive. This is genocide on another level.
We are poisoning a resource upon which a whole race of people are dependent. And we have the power together to eliminate that threat.
Seeing wild fish in empty marine harvest tanks. I've seen seals trapped. I've seen a sea lion trapped. There's no end to the damage this industry causes.
My commitment to you is as consistent as it has been through the election campaign, and as long as I am premier, I will work to protect wild salmon to the greatest extent of my abilities. I committed to that during the election campaign. The Cohen report is clear. We need to act on the recommendations. And the first order of business coming out of this meeting today is that Lana Popham will be meeting with the Minister of Fisheries at the federal level tomorrow night, and she will tell the stories to him that we heard in this room today. I'm committed to that as the leader of the provincial government.
I was born to be in a house like this one. I'm aware, Mr. Premier, as you are, of the mixed jurisdictions and other things that go on, the problems you face, the multiplicity of interests. But the reality is that your government has the authority not to reissue those permits. So the question is, when those licenses and those permits are expiring, and if we don't expect you to take them away now, but I mean, will you, with all due respect, the mumbo-jumbo of talking to the federal minister and talking here and talking there, will you or will you not deny those permits when they come here?
All right, so here we are at Co-op Radio, and that was the premier in the Alert Bay Big House on October the 10th speaking about his commitment to protect wild salmon.
That's right. So that was a historic meeting, really, that took place in Alert Bay with Premier John Horgan, who met with eight different Kwakwaka'wakw nations to talk about the Net Pen salmon farms in their territory. So no promises were made, but there were a lot of discussions between the chiefs and Premier John Horgan. And now we're just waiting to see what happens, essentially. And there, at the end there, we heard Chief Bill Wilson, who said, "The reality is your government has the authority not to reissue those permits. So when those expire, will you renew them?" He asked this directly to Premier John Horgan, and Horgan responded saying that he thinks it's sending out a pretty clear message to those that are in business with net fish farming, and that there's a large body of opinion against the activity. So no clear answer, but hopefully some movement in the right direction. I will see.
Thanks to Co-op Radio for that audio. Our next feature comes from CKUW. As Canadians are becoming more and more acutely familiar with the threat posed by runaway climate change, there has been mounting pressures on the Trudeau government to take urgent action and devise a strategy for transitioning the country away from fossil fuels and toward low-carbon sources. a conference held in Winnipeg on October 11th and 12th and hosted by Winnipeg-based Minister of Natural Resources Jim Carr, was geared specifically towards achieving that purpose. Michael Welch of local campus and community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM was able to attend the event as media and bring us his report.
Carbon sequestration techniques, revolutionary new electric vehicles, and solar technologies, northern visions for remote microgrids and renewable energy, utilizing bioenergy as an energy source, the prospect of driverless transportation and multiple efficiencies built around a digitalization of communication, energy, and transportation were just some of the discussion points presented at Winnipeg's recent Generation Energy Conference. The event was the culmination of 25 weeks of in-person workshops and deliberative dialogues, as well as online and social media engagements on the question of how to transition to a reliable, affordable, and low-carbon energy future. According to the lead convener of the event, Natural Resources Minister Jim Carr, 350,000 people, including 320,000 Canadians, got involved in what he called the conversation of a generation. Special guest speakers at the event included Fatih Birol, the executive director of the International Energy Agency, Rainer Bach, state secretary with the German Federal Ministry for Economic Affairs and Energy, and the writer and noted economic and social theorist Jeremy Rifkin. The engagement process involved industry players, but it also connected with Canadians from all walks of life, including youth.
My name is Sarah Ganoski. I am here at Generation Energy representing Student Energy, which is a program that's empowering young leaders in energy planning and development in Canada. I engaged 35 students between the ages of 18 and 35 in a workshop discussion on planning for our energy future in 2030 and 2050. We are only interested in collaboration and partnership. We do not want a conflictual engagement with anyone as we transition to a cleaner energy future.
Minister Carr expressed optimism that the process his government had put in place would result in a positive transformation of the country's energy policy, but an NDP member of parliament who came out on the first day of the conference was not so convinced.
Linda Duncan, Member of Parliament for Edmonton Strathcona, and my portfolio currently is environment and climate change. They keep consulting, talking about, and what people are wanting is action. We want action on energy efficiency. We want action on getting First Nation communities off diesel. We want action on moving us more expeditiously toward a clean energy future.
Minister Carr made a special point of acknowledging his government's respect for Indigenous title in both the construction of pipelines and the development of future energy sources.
This province in Manitoba, when hydro was developed, a lot of optimism, but First Nations in particular were disproportionately impacted.
And we have learned our lessons, and I hope we've learned them well over the years about the importance of early and constant engagement with Indigenous communities. And we are seeing that the result of that experience is taking us to better places every time we do it.
Sego, Anin, Kanoshawak, Indigenous, Makwadota. My name is Bob Watts. I'm from Six Nations Reserve in Southern Ontario. So I think in some places people are impatient. They want to see what are we going to do? How are we going to change some of the decision-making structures we have here in Canada? How are we going to share power? And how are we going to honor Indigenous and treaty rights? So, there's clearly work to be done. Nice words, but we need to see how they're going to be manifest in a practical way.
Even if the 2 days of discussion were weighted in favor of technological solutions, there were a couple of breakout sessions which addressed questions of social impacts and visioning in the face of the needed energy transformation.
My name is Chelsea Vowell, and I'm with Métis in Space. Definitely the idea in Canada that that we need energy, and we need to get it from areas, you know, that are in the north to serve the urban south. And so it's sort of like, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the difficulties it causes for the few, which I think then, again, disproportionately impacts Indigenous peoples and is inherently unjust. This idea that we should take that into account when doing any sort of, coming up with any sort of energy policies, to me, that is not something, I don't think that is the mainstream at all. This is something really unique that I saw discussed here today.
The development of a Canadian energy strategy is an evolving process and will be informed by a report informed by citizen dialogues over the last 6 months. The report will be tabled in November. The public can find out more about the government's process and some of the feedback they've been getting from Canadians by visiting the website generationenergy.ca. From Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabe territory on the homeland of the Métis Nation, this is CKUW's Michael Welch.
Thank you to CKUW for contributing that report. You're still listening to Groundwire. your source for community radio news from the grassroots. We'll be right back after this. Was a track by White Poppy called Hypnotized from the album The Pink Haze of Love. Welcome back to Groundwire. New editions available bi-weekly online at groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station. Now it's time for a community radio report brought to us by Gretchen King from CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. She reports about the recent hearings concerning community television in Gatineau, Quebec by the Canadian Radio, Television and Communications Commission.
Community television was up for discussion at public hearings held for license renewals by the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission in October. The commission heard from independent community television broadcasters like Tilil.
A little history for those who are not familiar with my station. We go by the name Tilil. We operate as an English and French language remote community-based television station broadcasting over the air and serving the communities in and around Alma-Dam in Nova Scotia. We are also lucky enough to be carried by Eastlink within our county in Richmond. We are also carried by Seaside Cable and Bell Satellite. While we are carried by cable companies because of the CRTC broadcasting decision in 2002, number 322, we are not considered a cable community channel. We are one of very few. I believe at last count there was 8 small independent stations who hold the same license as our own. We have been on the air for over 20 years, and Tilil is now fairly well established. We play an important role in our community through our programming. We provide the only local television content about Alma-Dam and the surrounding areas. Our area doesn't have a daily newspaper, so the information we provide is highly relevant to our area. While we are grateful that the Commission's policy allows us to even be able to broadcast as we do, we feel that there is more that can be done to help us become even more sustainable.
Complaints were also brought forward to the CRTC against community television stations run by private companies like Shaw, TELUS, Rogers, and Videotron.
Good afternoon, Chairman Scott and commissioners. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you at this hearing. I am Deepak Sahasrabuddhe. I founded a local web-based community television service called NewWest.tv in New Westminster, BC, and I am an active member of CACTUS. I intervened in Shaw's last license hearings, license renewal hearings, 7 years ago to say that our local cable company did not meet the regulatory requirements for community television in New Westminster. I was told by CRTC that my concerns would be addressed with the company at a later date. I am here to tell you now that there has been no change in the New Westminster community programming.
The commission heard again from independent community television based in Montreal. 2 years ago, Videotron's community television station MaTV was found in non-compliance by the CRTC after a complaint was filed by ICTV. At the hearing, Commissioner Duprat questioned ICTV's Leif Marouf about changes at MaTV.
And Videotron since has made many efforts to try to ensure community reflection and encourage community members to submit program projects.
We disagree with your assessment that there has been any much change at Videotron. There has been cosmetic change at Videotron to make themselves look better and that they are trying. But this is a company that held the license for 40 years. So if it took 40 years to get the first indigenous show, I mean, I don't know how much celebration you want us to have. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm an Arab that's living in Quebec. My community in Montreal is over 300,000 linguistic and ethnic minority. We are the biggest in Quebec. I cannot find one producer in MaTV that is an Arab because the policy itself says the main reason for these stations is reflection. And if Videotron decide that we are not to have that reflection, I believe that conveys racist intentions. The actions have consequences, and the consequence is exclusion of our communities.
Groups like the Community Media Advocacy Center raise concern over the millions spent in public funds annually for community television. Zoe Ludsky, CMAC Vice President, explains.
Yes. Off the top, you had said, you used the word that we seemed upset. And yes, there is an emotional upset when it comes to, you know, not having access. But it is also, as the gentleman from New Westminster pointed out, $400,000 of public money for his community alone. Where... Forget the emotion. Where's the dollars? Where is the money that I've put in, that the people have put in? I'm supposed to have access to a TV station. It's in the government policy. You know, my community radio station, I can walk down there and I can get on the air and have my voice heard. I can record a public service announcement for the disabilities community. I can get my voice heard in my community. TV, I have none of that. Nothing.
Listeners can check out the hearing transcripts and follow the outcome for Broadcasting Notice of Consultation, CRTC 2017-160, online at www.crtc.gc.ca. Search for 2017-160. This is Gretchen King, reporting for Groundwire from CKUT, broadcasting on Mohawk territory.
Thank you to CKUT Radio for filing that report. That's it for this edition of Groundwire, hosted by the volunteers of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwilitim Nations. Headlines this week were written by Michael Welsh and Om Salama Ratulma. Thank you to all of our contributors. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download it at groundwirenews.ca.